One up so you can make your way back to Milwaukee, and then those of us who are lobbying and with organizations and stuff, we can have those individuals talk. Welcome this morning.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate the courtesy. I'm here to speak in support of SB 611. Obviously, our interest in this began in earnest last summer when two Milwaukee officers were seriously wounded in June of 2009. The firearm that was used to shoot both of them was straw purchased, and we became very interested in developing initiatives that would retard the flow of weapons into our criminal community. We developed an initiative shortly after this that was tactical in nature outside of Badger Guns, which was the source of 2,000 of Milwaukee's crime guns between 2006 and 2009. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, of the six firearms traces we've done on homicides that have occurred in Milwaukee so far this year, five of the six weapons came back to Badger Guns. Even more to the point, in 21 months, six Milwaukee police officers were shot down in the streets of Milwaukee. All six firearms came from Badger Guns. One reason we've singled them out is, quite frankly, we believe that selling to the illegal community is part of their business plan. More on that in a moment. We developed an initiative outside of Badger Guns to make the stretch of roadway outside of Badger, which is located in West Milwaukee. We determined to make the stretch of roadway outside of Badger Guns, which is in Milwaukee. We wanted that to be the safest place to travel in the metropolitan area. And so we were very interested in enforcing all relevant speed laws and traffic safety laws in that vicinity. We were also keeping an eye out for indications of straw purchases. And what that means is that using surveillance tactics, we observed whether or not individuals were making frequent trips back and forth between private autos and the facility, or groups of individuals entering the store, and several of them exit, and then another person comes out with a package. And we were also looking at groups of individuals that had with them a female that entered the store, and the female purchased the weapon. In 6 months, we stopped 400 people who matched those categorizations. We arrested 71 convicted felons in this operation. We also recovered 28 illegally possessed firearms directly in front of this store. I've got a couple of case studies that indicate some of the dynamics of the problem we're facing. On September 7th, 2008, at 7th and National in Milwaukee, a woman was involved in a traffic crash, and a dispute followed. She went home and told her boyfriend, who was a convicted felon. They both returned to the scene, and the felon boyfriend brought with him a semi-automatic pistol from their house that the girlfriend had straw purchased at Badger Guns. He fired into a crowd, striking a victim three times. They were caught, and the girlfriend confessed that she had straw purchased the gun and ammunition for her brother, also a felon with an extensive criminal record, because she knew he couldn't buy it for himself. On June 9, 2009, Milwaukee police officers Graham Kunisch and Brian Norberg were monitoring school closing when they stopped a suspicious person on a bike. He shot them both in the face and in the body with a .40 caliber semi-automatic pistol. They survived but might never wear their uniforms again. We watched a store video surveillance tape of Badger Guns 1 month prior to this incident. We watched the suspect pick out the gun used in the offense and the person with him buy it because the suspect was too young. Interestingly enough, the straw purchaser incorrectly filled out the paperwork the first time. When it said, "Are you buying this for yourself?" he checked off no. And the merchant very helpfully informed him, well, then he wouldn't be able to buy the gun. So the straw purchaser, of course, corrected the form and said, "Oh, yes, this is for myself." But for $40, he turned the gun over to the offender, who would later, within a month, shoot down two police officers. Now, offenders want to possess guns for a variety of reasons: status, gang membership, entrepreneurial drug dealing, robbery, or protection from the next guy. Our challenge in Milwaukee, given that it's a narrow slice of the population that is highly violent and has almost unfettered access to legal handguns, our challenge is to alter their mental calculation. For those of them who choose a criminal lifestyle, it is arguably more dangerous to get caught without their gun than to get caught with it. We have a responsibility in the criminal justice system and in the legislative bodies to make them alter that calculation where it's more dangerous to get caught with the gun. And that's part of our problem right now. Part of our problem is you can get arrested 100 times for carrying a concealed weapon, and it's always a misdemeanor. And part of the problem is a significant percentage of their firearms are high-quality firearms purchased by a straw purchaser. And that today is what we're trying to deal with, is to alter the mental calculation of the purchaser so they recognize that they are incurring a serious sanction for buying that weapon. Furthermore, you know, if you create a felony here, you create a circumstance in which those people will be prohibited from carrying, and if we do catch them with a firearm, at least they will be a felon in possession, which is a felon by itself. So we need penalties that are strong enough to change their mental calculus. The reform we're recommending clearly does not impact responsible gun owners. It's an aggressive effort to help reduce violent crime and the number of illegal guns in our community. Right now, the word in the street is get caught and get out. The fear that criminals have of immediate and lasting incarceration has been eroded. Changing the law to make straw purchase a felony provides a change, and it improves a misdemeanor crime to a felony crime. The straw purchaser becomes a felon upon conviction, which means they can't buy a firearm ever again. And the cycle of introducing illegal firearms through that person is broken. It also provides teeth to prosecution and the ability of the state to pursue cases that are occurring beyond their respective jurisdictions. Often, straw purchasers are discovered after a firearm has been used to commit a violent crime. This provides the state prosecutor with prosecutorial leverage to create better results. Illegal gun possession poses a great threat to our public safety and well-being. We need strong, effective laws to keep criminals and their guns off the street. The passing of this bill ensures that we will have additional tools to protect our neighborhoods. Now, firearm possession and ownership is more common, we are finding in our city, among those who have been arrested than it is among the general population. This suggests that there is no respect for the penalties associated with illegally obtaining and carrying a firearm. The recommendations before you address this issue, and we strongly support them. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much, Chief. I think one of the questions that I have, stepping away from this, and you know, you don't even have to necessarily answer today if you don't so choose, but that you could send it to us. What else could we be doing outside of these things that you hear us talking about today that could help us to address the issue? And even if those issues are issues that are not just things that can be done at the state level, that we have to do at a different level of government, whether it's local or whether it's federal level, and how we can help in that process and in those communications and to sit down and have those conversations, because you seem to have thought about this. It seems to be targeted, and that's the piece that we can see the outcomes with the strategy that you spoke about, mm-hmm. that you've created as the safest, you know, strip of Milwaukee streets, so to say, on the way to Badger, you know, and I'm wondering what collaborations have happened with, did you say it was West Milwaukee?
Right.
With West Milwaukee, I wanted to not say South because I remember you correcting yourself. West Milwaukee, what partnerships are happening there for them to have the same efforts? What can we do? I don't represent South Milwaukee, but I'm certain that the legislators from there do.
They've been very helpful.
Right.
I mean, obviously, it's a very small location.
There's only so much they can do.
But the police chief there and his people have been very helpful. They've done inspections. They've collaborated with us. It's a major, major problem for us, as certainly you well know. And I think there are an array of proposals before the legislature that can help us out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not someone who knee-jerk says we need a new law to fix every problem that we've got to deal with. But I think we do have a responsibility to look at the data, you know, and as we analyze the data about our crimes, to pull out from that data, narrow slices of misbehavior that can be affected by strengthening certain laws. And that's why, as I say, the challenge before us is to alter that mental calculation.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I strongly believe that if you are illegally carrying a firearm, in a concealed manner, that should be a felony crime. All right, our bad guys are walking around armed. And an awful lot of them are, in fact, felons whose cases got downgraded in a plea bargain. It's a fact of life in the system. It can't be helped. But the point is they're carrying firearms routinely. They can get arrested time after time after time, and it remains a misdemeanor. And the sanctions for misdemeanors are nowhere near as serious as the sanctions for felonies. And I think if you look at that connection and the connection from that to the straw purchasing, you can begin to understand why the days of Saturday night specials are long behind us. None of our bad guys carry cheaply manufactured handguns that might break down. They're carrying high capacity, quality firearms, 40 calibers, 45s, 9 millimeters, and they're carrying them routinely. And they're the ones whose behavior we need to affect. And I believe we can affect their behavior without having any negative effect on those people who lawfully purchase and lawfully use firearms.
Thank you so much. We have Senator Sullivan.
Chief, thanks for coming to Madison today. Senator Taylor and I are both fortunate that large parts of our districts are policed by you and by the Milwaukee Police Department. And so I want to thank you for your efforts there. Senator Taylor pointed out she does not represent West Milwaukee. I do. And so I am very familiar with the issue that you're talking about. I appreciate your enforcement efforts there. One thing that I think is helpful to the committee about your testimony is that we're striking a balance here where this is not about the erosion of Second Amendment rights. I think that we're hearing from law enforcement and Second Amendment advocates on the bill saying that in terms of the straw buyer, role, this is something that, frankly, I look at as a threat to police officers. And this is not about preserving somebody's Second Amendment rights. We've got an awful lot of gun advocates here who are saying we're fine with this thing. So I wanted to thank you for your testimony on this, because I think you can speak to it as the chief of Milwaukee Police with greater authority than really anybody else I can think of in the state. Mm-hmm. With your indulgence, I'd like to get your impression on an upcoming bill that we'll be hearing about a little bit later, and that is Senate Bill 129, which is the Castle Doctrine. There's a element within the proposed bill that creates a presumption that the use of deadly force is reasonable if it takes place on your own property. The presumption does not apply if the person who's getting shot is somebody who's identified themselves as a police officer. I'm concerned about this in terms of no-knock entry. I'm concerned that after the fact that this can create an opportunity for a police officer, you know, for the defendant to simply say, I didn't hear your officer identify himself or herself as a police officer. And I think that there's an element there that could end up representing a threat, a further threat to law enforcement entering a home or serving a warrant, which has got to be always a situation fairly fraught with danger, and I don't want the legislature to be contributing to that. I was wondering if you could address that for us.
I think it. I have not read the entire bill, so that is my caveat and disclaimer here.
But you're familiar with what we talk about as the Castle Doctrine.
Yes, I am, and okay. And so I do want to make a strong point. I understand the symbolic power of this law, and I understand the symbolism of appearing that one votes against the man's or woman's right to defend their castle. So it's one of those, pieces of legislation that's inherently fraught. I would urge that the most careful consideration and crafting be directed towards language that clearly and as comprehensively as possible takes this argument away that the shooting of police officers is somehow related to protecting your castle. Because I'll tell you, in Milwaukee, I cannot think in the 2.25 years I've been there of a single example of somebody armed protecting their house from from legitimate bad guys. All the shootouts in my houses are either people shooting at cops or shooting at other drug dealers that are trying to rip off the first drug dealer for their stash and their money. And so the notion that one drug dealer is going to be able to defend himself from another drug dealer with a castle doctrine to me is patently absurd. Both sides are wrong. It's usually a business dispute. And so we need language that takes that off the table. And certainly one of my six officers was shot through a door doing a no-knock, high-impact warrant. And everybody in there was a bad guy. Everybody in there was a drug dealer. This is bad stuff. And so in trying to protect the rights of individuals to defend themselves, which I think they have by common law anyway, if you're going to craft literal language, you've got to be very careful that we don't create this thicket of legalistic defenses for criminal behavior used against either co-conspirators or used against law enforcement personnel.
Thank you so much. Chief, what I have done is pulled out my copy of the legislation so that you'll have it. I put my office information on there so that you can just call in, give some feedback, or you can email us to give some feedback. If there's a way that you feel that the change in the legislation would be appropriate. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that there has to be a balance, and I want to figure out how to create that balance. I don't want it to be tainted on any side, because in the end, discretion will have to fall on all sides mm-hmm. of the issue. But I think we have to balance it. And so I want to be able to have some conversation that talks about how we create that.
I understand. It's a challenge to craft the appropriate legislation, and I certainly am empathetic with the pressure you're under from all sides.
Frankly, to be honest, I'm not feeling any pressure. I'm just feeling because, you know, people have wanted to do this legislation for a long time since I've been here. So there were times where maybe there was pressure. You know, the cards coming in isn't what it is. It's really trying to mark that balance that mm-hmm. can respect all sides. So at this point, what I want to feel is that we're doing it right. So I'm not, I guess, pressure from the sense of feeling uncomfortable, like, you know, I've got to do this because such and such said it. You know, mm-hmm. that's not the issue. But I think you bring up some good points that we want to balance, and I am concerned about one group being able to be exempted from it, and then how it can be used in the way that Senator Sullivan said. So there's balance there that has to be created. So anyway, thank you for chiming in on that. I hope that you'll take the legislation and give some feedback. And one last thing while I have you here, not on necessarily on these topics, as you have shown to laser in on using data and strategies to address issues that exist in our department, I encourage you to do the same, to laser in on citizen complaints, on that system, on how it works, on the perspective and the perception that all communities have of the police department. It is an area and discretion, and seeing how discretion is used in the department and whether or not that discretion is balanced among all the communities that exist. I'm excited because I see that you've been pretty no-nonsense with your officers, but very supportive of your officers. It's that balance that, I'm sorry, I don't mean to compare you to my parents, but in a way, the balance that, you know, I got from my mom and my dad, and you're doing it in a community. You're saying to your officers that you have expectation, and you're showing leadership in the community, and you're getting results. I think that's a good thing. And so as a leader in that community, I'm sharing with you that I think there are some areas that we need to look at more closely in the department and laser in the same way and get the same kind of outcomes that we can be proud of. So thank you for coming today and being
so
active in the legislative process to get things done to help you have the tools.
Appreciate your leadership on this issue.
Thank you. Next, we have Brandon Strand.